debate for evolution versus intelligent design in school.
Hello, my name is Joelle, and I am the captain for the Step Ups, the affirmative side to the debate of evolution versus intelligent design. Brett will make our first argument, Steve the second, and Andrew the third. Evolutionists, holla! The theory of evolution has been in controversy for many, many years. It questions the idea that a superior being created life, a simple answer to an endlessly complex question. Evolution is based on facts that have been acquired over years of investigation and the search for the truth about the real origin of life. To give you a little background on where the theory of evolution came from, I will talk about Charles Darwin. Beginning the devout Christian studies in the Galapagos Islands, studying turtles and barnacles, he began the quest to find how populations split off into two different species. His first theory was sunken land bridges, but he was very skeptical of that. He then thought of floating masses. Taking numerous seeds, soaking them in water for months, and then planting them, Darwin discovered that the plant was still able to grow. He then asked British survey vessels if they had ever seen a floating mass with animals on them, and that too was confirmed. This was an answer to only a small part of the much larger question. From those beginnings to his later years, Darwin now argues evolution has developed humans, animals, and plants into what we see today, by the order of natural selection. Fossil records have shown the growth of new generations not matching the parents before them. Many arguments come from the holes in evidence shown for evolutionism. However, there is no bigger hole in the idea of intelligent design than who or what created us. The next question we have to ask ourselves is whether or not creationism should be taught alongside evolutionism in our science classes in school. Evolution is a scientific theory developed after years of study and research. Creationism, though it may be argued, is not scientific and therefore should not be taught alongside evolution in our science classes. In this debate, Brett will discuss the validity of what creationism relies on for science, how they have a major lack in explanations for predictions made to back up their theory, and testing and confirming a hypothesis. In science, a major attribute one must have is to admit you're wrong when a hypothesis comes back negative. This has happened in many cases. The world was thought to be flat, but Columbus never saw that horizon get closer. The Earth used to be the center of the universe until Galileo realized, nope, it's the sun. We rotate around it. Now people of strong religious background believe a stronger, more powerful being created us, though there is no proof that something can be created from nothing. Steve will talk about this evidence found in 1953 by Stanley Miller and Harold Urey. It is thought that the prebiotic world consisted of water, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide. Miller and Urey's experiment proved that with only those elements and extreme pressure, a solid mass could form, not needing the hand of an all-powerful being. Additionally, meteorites have been proven to carry 90 amino acids, 19 of which scientists have discovered are the building blocks of life. In order to be associated with science, a subject must be tested with the scientific method. One must observe and hypothesize on the subject at question, collect data, analyze, and conclude based on what was found. All areas of science, including the evolution theory, uses scientific method. Intelligent design simply does not. Teaching a non-scientific evidence, ignoring, falsification denying course alongside an evolution class would simply be wrong and confusing for our already swamped students. On top of these facts I have already discussed, creation is a religion-based theory, though not purely focused on the direct literation of the Bible. With this being so, teaching creationism alongside evolution in a science class would be a clear violation of the constitutional amendment clarifying the separation of church and state. Though it has arrived in the courts for many years trying to decide if one or both should be taught, recently a judge in 2005 said, "We have concluded intelligent design is not a science," unquote, and it therefore should not be taught alongside other scientific theories. With these statements spoken by our United States judicial system, the decision should be clear. Creationism should not be taught alongside evolution in our science classes. And now for Emma, she will introduce her team.
Hello, my name is Emma Martinez. We are the negative side for team
BAM Physics 4.
Which is composed of Anel Cortez, James Lee, and Melissa Potter. We will be discussing the topic of whether intelligent design should be taught in science classes alongside Darwinian evolution, and we believe that it should. The topic of the origin of life and evolution has been the subject of debate for most of the 19th century. The theory of evolution that was introduced by Charles Darwin in his book Origin of Species explains that all of life's complexity, order, and design is caused as a result of a simple, blind, random process that he so simply calls natural selection. Today, the theory of evolution is the only acceptable explanation for life on Earth that is taught in schools. Intelligent design, on the other hand, has been debunked as appropriate for teaching in schools as presented by many court cases. They rule that the idea of intelligent design cannot uncouple itself from its creationist roots. In other words, the intentions of intelligent design have been misinterpreted as an underhanded attempt at trickling religion into the minds of school-age children, and that it is the biblical version of creationism, and that it is in clever disguise. The United States federal court ruled that a public school district's requirements for science classes to teach that intelligent design is an alternative to the theory of evolution went against the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. We are not implying that the theory of evolution is not acceptable and should be replaced by the teaching of intelligent design. We are saying that we should merely expose children to both theories evenly without discrimination towards one theory or the other. Intelligent design is by no means a religious movement, as many people believe. Creationism and the theory of intelligent design are, in fact, very different. Creationism looks at life on Earth through the eyes of the book of Genesis in the Bible, whereas intelligent design argues that certain features of the universe and all living things are best explained by an intelligent cause, and not an undirected process called natural selection. Michael Behe explains intelligent design as an attempt to account for the data that has been collected over the past 50 years and goes back to the idea that there is a definite appearance of having been designed. This is an argument that was also suggested by ancient Greek philosophers thousands of years ago. Today, my teammates will present two concepts that support intelligent design: irreducible complexity and simplified complexity. James will be arguing that a name change is necessary for the general public to gain a better understanding and a clearer definition of what intelligent design is needed in order for schools to integrate it into the curriculum. And now the debate will begin.
Hi, my name is Brent Hilton, and I'll be arguing the first point for the affirmative team. So both evolution and creation are theories, and for this reason are religious leaders and religion-controlled politicians of the American public that public schools should teach both creationism and evolution side by side. Because this, after all, seems fair, right? Wrong. Considering the fact that about 45% of Americans take the Bible story of creation literally, and only 10% subscribe to a purely scientific explanation, indicates the power and the danger of religious belief to rule our education system. The problem with teaching both in school stems from a confusion of category. One describes a science, the other describes a religious belief. Beliefs, however, regardless of how strongly believed or the number of believers, do not determine how nature works. Beliefs do not equal facts. The scientific method is perhaps the best tool we have in achieving those facts. Teaching creationism in a biology class would make just as little sense as teaching the flat earth beliefs in a geometry class and an earth-centered universe in an astronomy course, or a zoology lecture on how unicorns once lived. These examples may seem extreme, however, they're all derived directly from the Bible. So the question is, does the intelligent design theory follow the scientific method? To most conservative Christians, creation science is a valid form of science. It is mainly derived from the biblical book of Genesis, whose authors were inspired by God to write material that is free of error. In fact, it is the only error-free explanation of the origins of the Earth's life forms, the Earth's geologic features, the Earth itself, and the rest of the universe. It is also the only complete account of origins. It has no missing information or gaps in knowledge. To scientists who are not religious conservatives, however, creation science is not a form of science for a number of reasons. The first contradiction of the scientific theory is the lack of laws. Miracles, by definition, are extraordinary events based on spiritual laws, and are therefore not based on natural laws, which is a requirement of science. Creation science does not rely on the observations of the world around us or make use of empirical evidence to explain the act of creation or the acts of a supreme being. These missing observations and evidence are crucial in the development of any form of scientific study. The scientific method is defined as, quote, a systematic pursuit of knowledge involving the recognition and formulation of a problem, the collection of data through observation and experiment, and the formulation and testing of hypotheses, end quote. The issue here is that there simply are no formulation and testing of hypotheses. The hypotheses are simply given by revelation, whether it be by prophets and or the Bible, and are accepted as is, without even considering this collection of data through observation and experiment. The second problem with intelligent design is its lack of explanation and predictive power. If I were to ask a seventh grader what their definition of science is, they would probably say something along these lines. Science is when you explain something that happened and make predictions based upon your observations. Holding up creation science of this description poses an obvious problem. Can natural law explanations based on the world around us be used in creation science to make explanations and predictions? No. Are the subsequent predictions, if there even are any, also based on empirical data? Absolutely not. The next problem is with testability, confirmation, and falsifiability. First of all, is there testability and confirmation in creation science? It would be difficult, if not impossible, to test and confirm statements that are based on spiritual laws. When investigating creation science, we reach the following problems. First, is it possible to test? Are there any instruments or means by which a scientist could take creation and run experiments to validate their claims? The problem becomes this. A creationist view is that the creation event was brought on by the will of a supreme being and not due to a series of natural events explained by empirical laws. The next problem is with confirmation. The need to create new theories due to disproving evidence against previous theories is an essential part of science. Unfortunately, it is only one part of science, and it seems that creation science relies too heavily on this technique by constantly attempting to disprove other theories in order to boost up its own validity. Finally is the problem with falsifiability. The inability of creation science to give way to falsifiability is one of the most problematic criteria. Falsifiability is one of the defining characteristics of science. For something to be falsifiable, it makes it possible to refute the idea or theory, thus giving way to its growth and development. If there were no falsifiability, Columbus wouldn't have sailed the ocean blue for fear of falling off the edge of the earth. Without falsifiability, there would be no reason to continue scientific investigation as a whole, and this means that without it, we might still be under the belief that the Earth is indeed at the center of the universe. Scientists, if they already call themselves that, must subscribe to the idea that any of their theories, no matter how long they have stood, can always be proven false. Unfortunately, this is not the case with creation science. There isn't a single observation that would ever prove the creation theory false. This complete lack of falsifiability eliminates any chance of being accepted as a creation as being accepted as a science at all. The final problem is with tentativeness. To be tentative is defined as, quote, not fully worked out or developed, end quote. Do creationists believe that their theory to be not fully worked out or developed? Of course not. In fact, members of the Creation Research Society agree to take the Bible literally. Well, throughout the Bible, we read of things being unchanged yesterday, today, and forever. This concept alone is an absolute contradiction to the definition of any scientific theory. For all these reasons, the idea of intelligent design is not scientific because it evades nearly all criteria of the scientific method, and therefore it should not be taught in science classes. And now is Anel for the rebuttal.
This is Anel, and I will be rebutting against Brett's argument. I will first be refuting the argument in the sense that we are not exploring the creation effect as in a biblical sense, which is how it is most often perceived. And as Brett presented in his argument, we are not creationists, we are intelligent design theorists. We are trying to implement intelligent design and not creation. Intelligent design does follow the scientific method in the manner that it is still in process. Evolution is just a theory, and that is not what evolutionists want us to believe. In short, explaining that the origin of life is a big problem for evolutionists. It is such a problem that mainstream scientific literature even considers the possibility of life dropping from outer space, called the theory of panspermia, which is published in the Scientific American article in February of 1992. Also, in an interview made by Michael Dembski, he said that he stopped submitting peer-reviewed journals because they are slow and time to print, and he makes more money from publishing books. Even the most reviewers are biased on intelligent design and wouldn't even take the time to research if they didn't think that it could some way be true. Science is continuously thought to follow the complete five steps of the scientific theory, yet the issue becomes a bit sticky when discussing origins. How do we test the theory of evolution? We don't have the luxury of having a miniature universe with eons of time in the corner of a laboratory, or do we? I don't think so. This is why it is still a theory. Both evolution and intelligent design, which is what we are promoting, not creationism, which is completely different, are left to propose a model and then are to be compared with nature and its consistency. What is constantly misunderstood is that the theory of intelligent design came to complete force when Michael Denton, a non-Christian biologist, wrote The Evolution, A Theory in Crisis, which was then followed by Michael Behe in his footsteps, creating the theories of irreducible complexity and specified complexity, later to be discussed by my teammate. And now I will be introducing our first argument, which is irreducible complexity. I will be proposing the first argument for the inclusion of intelligent design in the current educational curriculum. I would like to commence by saying that we are not here to impose any specific beliefs into the minds of active members of society. However, we are here to propose that intelligent design is very acceptable in the science classrooms. Most evolutionists, such as my opponents, don't fully understand that advocating intelligent design includes many other aspects that do not solely rely on religious backings. Irreducible complexity is one of these points. As my partner Emma described very clearly, intelligent design is not, I repeat, is not religiously based. Widely renowned Richard Dawkins, who is a very strong evolutionary Darwinian biologist, nonetheless says that biology is a study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. It is important to realize that all biologists readily acknowledge that the appearance of design, at least, is very strong in life. This is where an irreducible complex system comes into effect, which is defined by Michael Behe as one that could not function if it were any simpler, and therefore could not possibly have been formed by successive additions to a precursor system with the same functionality, which means we are too complicated to have evolved from nothing. Scientific literature contains many examples of very complex systems that everyone says to appear to have been designed. An irreducibly complex biological system would be a powerful challenge to the Darwinian theory of evolution. The odds against DNA assembling by chance are 10 to the 40,000th degree according to the astronomer Fred Hoyle, author of Evolution from Space. Now, the major problem with this ongoing debate is that evolutionists have not been open-minded to the possibility that all of the research that has been performed for centuries could quite possibly be incorrect. It is only when we go against the grain of what has already been established that we actually come to find new explanations. Understanding that knowledge has many points of view and what scientists must realize. Creationism might bring many questions to the sense that it is quite often related to religion. Nonetheless, we are promoting that it is relatively distant from that in the sense that intelligent design is scientifically based. The best way to involve that we as intelligent design supporters believe is that there is no way that everything in this that is living happened by chance, which is what evolution promotes. Evolutionists seem to think that Darwin proved that natural selection could account for all the amazing evidences of design in nature. However, the only way we can absolutely be sure of what happened in prehistoric times is for someone who was there and is trustworthy enough to tell us what actually happened. And as far as we know, that is impossible, or might I ask the evolutionists, were you there? I highly doubt it. The question you might want to ask yourself is not could have evolution happened, but did it actually happen? When Darwin wrote his book of Origin of Species, he was quite ignorant, and all science was ignorant about the molecular basis of life. By irreducibly complex, I mean a single system composed of well-matched interacting parts that contribute to a basic function, where the removal would cause it not to function. Promoting intelligent design through irreducible complexity is the only necessary in order to give enough credit to the highly complex organisms that allow most living species to operate. We as defenders of intelligent design present natural selection as implying the universe could not have been designed or created. There is no adequate explanation for the origin in life from dead chemicals. Even the simplest form is tremendously complex, more complicated than any machine could ever build. The fossil record, our only documentation of whether evolution actually occurred in the past, lacks any transitional forms, and all types appear fully formed when first present. The evidence that pre-man, or the ape man, as common thought, existed is dubious at best. Now tell me, evolutionists, is the monkey your uncle? Even the smallest bacterial cell has 100 proteins, DNA, RNA, and contains 100 billion atoms. Perhaps giving the students enough information for them to choose for themselves is a point evolutionists do not want society to perceive. And now here is Brent. Brent!
All right, this is Brent, and I will be rebutting irreducible complexity. So the argument of irreducible complexity is a seemingly reasonable defense against the theory of evolution. The first problem, however, is that it's nothing more than a bash on theory of evolution. As I discussed previously, simply making attempts to prove another theory wrong, while good for strengthening theories and testing the scientific method, does not hold any ground as to create a new theory such as intelligent design. The idea of irreducible complexity simply holds no evidence for intelligent design. The essay by Michael Behe on the idea of irreducible complexity, as discussed by Anel, ironically provides nothing more than another style of explaining evolution. The example that's used in Behe's argument is that of the mousetrap being an irreducibly complex system, which is composed of too many useless parts to have been selected for by evolution. This argument, although it's creative, demonstrates a complete lack of understanding of the theory of evolution and its process. Later, my teammate Steve will better explain the process of evolution as a scientifically sound theory. For now, however, I will explain the flaw in the idea of irreducible complexity and the mousetrap example. If you take a mousetrap apart, there actually are a lot of useful pieces. Removal of the catch and the metal bar certainly do eliminate the function of the mousetrap, however, you now have a very useful tie clip or a paper clip. And the catch can be even used for a fish hook. The spring could be used as a two-part keychain, and the wooden base could be used as a paperweight. The remaining smaller pieces could be served a variety of functions, from toothpicks to nutcrackers to clipboard holders. The point of this is to demonstrate something that has been the basis for evolution and long understood by scientists. If you take apart something that may seem to be an irreducibly complex system, you're left with many parts that have many different uses but are certainly still functional. The argument that every system, living or not, must be assembled in its final form before it can be useful and therefore selected by natural selection, I'm sorry to say, is erroneous on all accounts. Evolution does not simply make things from nothing. It uses the chance of certain functional proteins or molecules assembling in new and different configurations to be an even more useful and desirable trait that can be selected for by evolution. For example, the bacterial flagellum, while very useful in its current form, can actually be broken down into smaller parts that are still fully functional, just like the mousetrap. A small group of proteins from the flagellum can be utilized as bacteria as a means for injecting poisons into other cells. This trait itself allows for it to be selected by evolution and eventually combine with other proteins to form the flagellum that it did. The same thing can be seen in the proteins that clot blood. The work of Dr. Russell Doolittle has shown how evolution duplicated, retargeted, and modified proteins from the digestive system to produce the vertebrate blood clotting system. Scientists are currently working on understanding the evolution of systems that move proteins between subcellular compartments. In 1998 article in the journal Cell, a group led by James Rotham of the Sloan Kettering Institute explained the remarkable simplicity and uniformity of these mechanisms, saying that these mechanisms, quote, suggest in a natural way how the many and diverse compartments in eukaryotic cells could have evolved in the first place, end quote. This simply demonstrates further how science is advancing in understanding evolution and how the stagnant idea of intelligent design follows no scientific method and has no future. The idea of irreducible complexity does give scientists other directions to guide their research, but all it is a euphemistic form of stating that there is no way that evolution can be true because it's too complicated. It doesn't use any scientific or biochemical evidence to support it, and it's an inaccurate assessment of a complicated process. This attempt to go with gut instinct and not formulate a hypothesis, implement tests, and derive theories from empirical evidence underlies the idea of intelligent design and explains yet again why it is not a form of science. Steve will now argue why evolution is a more scientific approach and more appropriate in classrooms.
Hello, my name is Steve, and I will be for the affirmative side that evolution, through the proof of the scientific method, can be shown as the best indicator on the origins of life. To begin, we must start from the beginning. The major theory that is believed to have started the universe is the Big Bang. In this theory, the beginning of the universe is said to have began when an extremely dense and hot state exploded into an array of matter about 13.7 million years ago. Before this time, it is unknown and often disagreed on what the universe was like. However, evidence points to the idea of the Big Bang as truth. Furthermore, upon exploration and research of our universe, we can see that our universe is still expanding. Looking into the past, we can see that the universe has expanded from a state in which all matter and energy was at an immense temperature and density to what we see today. Additionally, the Big Bang theory also tells us that the conditions of today's universe are different from the conditions in the past and therefore the future conditions. This is where evolution begins. Once the universe was created through the Big Bang and knowing that the conditions were extremely different than they were today, we can now put evolution into play. How can life spring forth from this unstable universe? This is the question that has been asked for centuries. Once we apply the scientific method to this theory, we can see evolution and life begin. In 1953, Stanley Miller and Harold Urey applied the scientific method to the conditions of this new unstable universe. Miller took molecules which were believed to represent the major components of the early Earth's atmosphere and put them into a closed system. The molecules used in this experiment were methane, ammonia, hydrogen, and water. Once these simple elements were placed into the closed system with a continuous electric current applied through the system to stimulate lightning storms believed to be common on the early Earth, analysis of the experiment was done by chromatography. At the end of 1 week, Miller observed that as much as 10 to 15% of the carbon was now in the form of organic compounds. 2% of the carbon had formed some of the amino acids which are used to make proteins. Perhaps most importantly, Miller's experiments showed that organic compounds such as amino acids, which are essential to cellular life, could be made easily under the conditions that scientists believe to be present on the early Earth. With these basic components of life now generated naturally, the building blocks that make up each and every living thing began to evolve. In science, replication of results and ideas is key to understanding what is trying to be solved. The results of Miller and Urey now need to be reproduced in order to be accepted. It wasn't until 1961 that Juan Oro did this. In Oro's discovery, he found that hydrogen, cyanide, and ammonia could also form amino acids. More importantly, Oro also found a large amount of adenine was formed as well. The discovery of adenine also supports the evolutionist way of thinking. This is because adenine is one of only four base pairs in DNA, RNA, and ATP. Again, all of these things were discovered when placed in an environment with a reducing atmosphere, like Miller and Urey conducted. While it is believed lightning storms were extremely common on the primitive Earth, they were not continuous as Miller and Urey experiment portrayed. Thus, it has been argued that while amino acids and other organic compounds may have been formed, they would not have been formed in the amounts which the experiment produced. Many of the compounds made in Miller's and Urey's experiment are known to exist in outer space. On September 28, 1969, a meteorite fell over Murchison, Australia. While only 100 kilograms were recovered, analysis of the meteorite has shown that it is rich with amino acids. Over 90 amino acids have been identified by researchers to date. 19 of these amino acids are found on Earth. The early Earth is believed to be similar to many of the asteroids and comets still roaming the galaxy. If amino acids are able to survive in outer space under extreme conditions, then this might suggest that amino acids were present when the Earth was formed. More importantly, the Murchison meteorite has demonstrated that the Earth may have acquired some of its amino acids and other organic compounds by planetary infill.
My name is Melissa Potter, and I will be rebutting Steve's argument. While evolution, utilizing the scientific method, may be a very good defense, and it might be more valuable to our future of understanding, however, doesn't the scientific method require intelligence, imagination, and creativity, which would alluded to be as an ongoing cycle, constantly developing and changing. Many state that the scientific method is based on evidence and not belief. However, the first step within the scientific method is observation, which is not universal, which means it's partially based on belief and or your previous knowledge. My opponent talked about the Big Bang theory. According to our research, the standard Big Bang model does not give rise to lumpiness. That model assumes that the universe started out as a smooth, homogeneous, expanding gas. If you apply the laws of physics to this model, you get a universe that is uniform, a cosmic vastness of evenly distributed atoms with no organization of any kind, no galaxies, no stars, no planets. Needless to say, the night sky dazzling in its lumps and clumps and clusters say otherwise. So you tell me, how did the lumps get there? Evolutionists also believe that life happens in its own natural phenomenon. In every other scientific pursuit, the scientific method requires that we identify and explore all reasonable possibilities, seeking evidence for and against each hypothesis. But the scientific method limits itself to one, or sorry, evolutionists limit themselves to one answer based on the scientific method, starting with observation, hypothesis, predictions, and test. There's no way that you can observe the origin of life on Earth, and thus no way to conduct experimental investigation or to describe the process involved. So how can science ever know the right answer if we don't explore both possibilities? And now I will be presenting the second argument for the negative team, specified complexity. The intelligent design concept of specified complexity was developed by mathematician, philosopher, and theologian William Dubinsky. Dubinsky states that when something exhibits specified complexity, one can infer that it was produced by an intelligent cause, rather than being the result of a natural process. He states that details of living things can be similarly characterized, especially the patterns of molecular sequences and functional biological molecules such as DNA. Dubinsky defines complex specified information, used interchangeably with specified complexity, as anything with less than 1 in 10 to 150 chance of occurring by natural causes. Basically, specified complexity puts a distinction between natural events and intelligent causes. Basically, life is too complex to have occurred by chance. This concept also singles out patterns that are both specified and complex, meaning specified pattern that emits short descriptions and complex patterns, one that is unlikely to have occurred by chance. This conceptual idea that Dubinsky has created is strongly disputed by many in the scientific community, just saying that because it eliminates explanation sequentially, first regularity, then chance, finally defaulting to design. They argue that this procedure is flawed as a model for scientific inference because the asymmetric way it treats the different possible explanations renders it prone to making false conclusions. But isn't sequential elimination a way to form new theories and or ideas? So without this elimination, we would have far more reasons as to why we exist than just evolution and intelligent design.
All right, this is Steve again, and I will be rebutting Melissa's argument. Specified complexity is just a big math equation. It can't predict that something was done as a result of some master equation. Under specified complexity, the belief that some type of master plan has been laid out and that we can solve for this higher power is unfounded. There has never been an experiment that can prove this method. William Dembski's work has been proven to show inconsistencies, flawed use of mathematics, poor scholarship, and misrepresentation of others' results. It is hard to base the origins of life in such a faulty idea. Additionally, specified complexity supports evolution. Once life was put on Earth, evolution is said to have started taking place. It is also stated that if you believe in specified complexity, you are really supporting evolution, just not how life began or got here. With no other way of proving how life did get here, it is hard to believe that specified complexity is the answer. Additionally, since the belief of evolution does not play a role in specified complexity, how can you place a start point on evolution? We have fossils to show how life began as single-cell organisms and evolved into higher, more complex beings. Even with gaps in the fossil records, a clear evolution of plants and animals has always occurred on Earth. With evolutionism, we can prove with the use of the scientific method how life came to be. Like previously stated, a simple probability equation and patterns believed to have been discovered are not reason to believe in something. If you cannot apply the scientific method directly to what you are trying to study, then you cannot call it science. Specified complexity is not a marker of intelligent design. If specified complexity is determined according to a uniform probability interpretation, the natural processes are perfectly capable of generating it. To date, there are zero fully worked out positive examples of the design hypothesis applied to a scenario where there is a known design. All examples to date have been sketches used for illustrative purposes. The mathematical results apply only if the determination of specified complexity is made rigorously. A sketch is not typically regarded as a substitute for a positive validation, which again casts a shadow of doubt on the specified complexity theory. Finally, the main issue regarding the validity of specified complexity is an over-reliance on analogy. Almost all the arguments and examples of specified complexity rely on analogies with non-biological things. Mousetraps, combination locks, outboard motorcycles. Analogies may be useful for understanding or stimulating thought, but analogies prove nothing. Only when the analogous aspects are tested against the true nature of the object, then one can decide whether the analogy is a correct application or not.
We would now like to take a 1 minute break.
Intelligent design should not be taught in schools based off the legal and moral implications surrounding it. There has always been a conflict between the scientists and religion, dating back to as far as the time of Galileo, when he was punished for writing the book Dialogue that supported the Copernican theory, that the Earth revolved around the sun, which contradicts the Bible's false claim that everything revolved around the Earth. In more recent times, this conflict between science and religion is still around and mostly prominent in the education system, and thankfully it is tilting toward the side of science. So far, there have been four major cases that deal with this issue, specifically on the topic of evolution versus intelligent design, or creationism as it is formally labeled. The first being the Scopes Trial of 1925, also known as the Scopes Monkey Trial. This case involved John T. Scopes versus the state of Tennessee and its Butler Act, which provides that it shall be unlawful for any teacher in any of the universities, normals, and all others, public schools of the state, which are supported in whole or in part by the public school funds of the state, to teach any theory that denies the story of the divine creation of man as taught in the Bible, and to teach instead that man has descended from a lower order of animals. Incredibly, Scopes was found guilty. Not on the issue that he taught the Darwin theory, for that was not in question. He was forced to pay a fine because the people of the time were still very conservative in the fact that they felt this evolution theory was anti-Christianity. However, the defense attorney Clarence Darrow concluded at the end of his trial that we came down here to offer evidence in this case, and the court has held under the law that the evidence we had is not admissible. So all we can do is take an exception and carry it to a higher court and see whether the evidence is admissible or not. We cannot even explain to you that we think you should return a verdict of not guilty. We do not see how you could. We do not ask it." End quote. This was based on the fact that the judge not allow the defense to bring in 8 evolution experts for testimonies. It was not until 1968, in the Epperson versus Arkansas case, that the Supreme Court took into account the Constitution, primarily the Establishment and Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, which state that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibit the free exercise thereof. This case essentially dealt with the same situation as in the Scopes trial. A law is enacted that prohibits the teaching of evolution. Essentially, the Supreme Court found that the Arkansas law was not constitutional for the fact that the law was restricted to an attempt to erase the specific theory because of its conflict with the Bible, which, as Brett explained earlier, still seems to be the objective of the pseudoscience intelligent design. The next case that came about was in 1987, Edwards versus Aguillard, and it gives even more reinforcement to the science of evolution. It is from this point that we can see the theory of evolution winning in the battle against intelligent design. With the intelligent design side trying to simply include their pseudoscience with the teachings of evolution, in contrast to their previous attitude of completely trying to eliminate it. In 1980, the state of Louisiana passed the balanced treatment for creation science and evolution science in public schools Institution Act, which did not require the teaching of either evolution or creationism. On the other hand, if the theory of evolution was taught, then the creationist or intelligent design idea must also be included. Then, in 1987, the Supreme Court ruled the law to be unconstitutional based on the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. However, the Supreme Court did also state, "We do not imply that a legislator could never require that scientific critiques of a prevailing scientific theory could be taught. Teaching a variety of scientific theories about the origin of humankind to school children might be a valid one, done with the clear secular intent of enhancing the effectiveness of science instruction." In other words, creationism, aka intelligent design, is not a science in the sense that evolution is a science, as previously explained by Brett and Steve. The most recent court decision involving evolution occurred last year in the Kiltsmiller versus Dover Area School District in November of 2005. In this case, the local school board voted to require 9th grade biology teachers to read a statement about intelligent design prior to evolution discussions in class. 11 parents of the Dover Area School District challenged the decision, stating that it conflicted with the Establishment Clause. The school board argued that it did not teach intelligent design, but rather gave it as an alternative to evolution, which they claimed was filled with gaps, hence it could not be an established fact. This case, unlike the rest, was never even brought up to the Supreme Court, as Judge Jones of the United States District Court for the Middle District of Pennsylvania found for the plaintiffs and wrote a 139-page decision, which included statements such as, "The overwhelming evidence at the trial established that intelligent design is a religious view, a mere relabeling of creationism and not a scientific theory. After researching review of the record and applicable case law, we find that while intelligent design arguments may be true, a proposition on which the court takes no position, intelligent design is not a science. We find that intelligent design fails on 3 different levels, any one of which is sufficient to preclude a determination that intelligent design is science. They are: 1, intelligent design violates the century-old ground rules of science by invoking and permitting supernatural causation. 2, the argument of irreducible complexity, central to intelligent design, employs the same flawed and illogical contrived dualism that doomed creation science in the 1980s. And 3, intelligent design's negative attacks on evolution have been refuted by the scientific community." In conclusion, Judge Jones writes, "We have addressed the seminal question of whether intelligent design is science. We have concluded that it is not, and moreover, that intelligent design cannot uncouple itself from creationism, and thus religion. It seems pretty obvious to me that intelligent design should not be taught in schools in conjunction with the theory of evolution. As it has been shown by the court of law, it is not in fact a science, but rather a belief system built on the idea of eliminating the theory of evolution because it contradicts the word of the Bible. Until intelligent design can show it that it is a science, like evolution as previously explained by Steve, its only true place in scientific field is in the past, so that future generations can learn the way the real science is performed, so that we may then hopefully make some genuine progress in determining the origin of life in this universe.
My name is James, and I'll be rebutting Peter's argument. First and foremost, I would like to say that intelligent design, or the complexity theory, which technically it should be called, does not promote religion at all. And according to the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof of abridging the freedom of speech. Intelligent design does not support any religion. So the teaching of this theory in science classes should not be restricted at all. If anything, the theory should be supported by the part of the amendment pertaining to freedom of speech. Complexity theory, or intelligent design, has every right to be taught in the classroom as the evolutionary theory. Notice how in your argument you referred to creationism as intelligent design, which is not true. Creatism is the belief that a god was the one who started the origin of life, and from that everything was created. But intelligent design is basically a theory which states that something or some agent was the one responsible for everything that's here. And let's see. Alright, I'm going to go on to my argument, which explains more on this. We propose that to allow intelligent design to be taught in schools, we title the subject Critical Thinking, Complexity, or something along the lines of the complexity theory. Everyone's impressions on intelligent design is being all about religion, which in fact is more along the lines of creatism.